محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Tonight on Exposé, Western and Israeli entity broadcast media falsely claimed that Zionist Israeli warplanes targeted weapon depots belonging to Hezbollah in South Lebanon, when in reality they targeted residential areas. Now, Zionist mainstream media deceitfully claimed that the Islamic Republic of Iran cautioned Hezbollah not to spark full-scale war with Zionist Israel, when in reality, U.S. media openly reported that a large-scale Israeli entity campaign against Hezbollah is the last thing the U.S. wants right now. And an opinion poll revealed that 90% of the Lebanese hold the United States of America fully accountable for Zionist Israel's continued attacks on Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Relentless effort is what we are seeing from the Israeli occupation regime to conceal its army's daily losses, restrict information related to its soldiers, and continue spreading media fabrications concerning the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Hezbollah's advances on the northern front with Lebanon. Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert and writer at The Cradle, for more about it in Fake News Exposé. Thank you for being with us, Fuad. Now, if you follow closely Western and Israeli entity media, you find numerous news reports expressing confusion and loss when reporting about South Lebanon and the open front with the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah. Now, Fuad, if you can help us out here with what kind of strategy is that is being used by the Zionist media or the Western media, for that matter, when reporting about this open conflict with the Lebanese resistance on the northern border with Palestine?
Yeah, so the main strategy is and always has been portraying Lebanon as a terrorist stronghold. So let's begin with how the open front in South Lebanon is rarely ever reported on in Western media. Mm-hmm. And when it is, they fail to mention that Israel is actually targeting residential areas, industrial sites that have nothing to do with Hezbollah. So our first report for today is a Wall Street Journal report, which basically implies that Israel targeted a weapons depot belonging to Hezbollah in the town of Ghaziyeh near Saida, which is like 30 kilometers away from Beirut. Before we see what the Zionists really targeted, let's take a look at some other similar reports by The Sun and by TBN News. So here The Sun claims that Hezbollah terror cells were taken out in Israeli strikes. But it's clear from the Israeli army footage that's provided that these are residential areas because you can see the homes.
You could see, even if you don't know the area, Fuad, that it is a residential area. And you could see the mosque at the end of the footage as well.
And the color of the rooftops of the homes, it's clearly a residential area. So the next one, we have TBN News claiming that Israel targeted Hezbollah's vast underground tunnel network, which they claim has been built with the help of the North Koreans. Now, Western and Hebrew media has been reporting on this a lot lately, but honestly, we don't really know where they got any of it from.
So you're telling me that Hezbollah has built tunnels in South Lebanon with the help of North Korea, and they have footage to show us this?
That's what they're claiming.
For more than 30 years, Hezbollah has dug hundreds of kilometers of tunnels through the stone bedrock in southern Lebanon. Some of these tunnels are 40 to 80 meters deep, cut and developed with the help of North Korean technology. Published a report this week giving some details of this problem. This included an assessment that the tunnels were so extensive that if some of them were blown up, it could cause an earthquake and possibly landslides. This would lead to a humanitarian disaster, which Hezbollah would no doubt exploit to its own advantage. Began as early as the 1980s, but gained momentum in the late 1990s as a possibility of an Israeli invasion loomed larger in the minds of Hezbollah's leadership. The report goes on to say that Israel dropped bombs in southern Lebanon in order to burn the vegetation and discover a tunnel opening. 12 such openings were discovered using this method, which is entirely legal under international law, by the way. These tunnels openings were subsequently bombed and will not be available.
That is beyond, hysterical, because even, let's say, Hezbollah actually has tunnels fought underground. We as southerners have never heard them dig tunnels. Second, what kind of a footage? They didn't say where they got that footage from. I'm pretty sure that's not a Hezbollah person.
And of course, they have to use CGI because there's nothing else.
Exactly, building that tunnel. And the thing that really caught my eye at the end when he said that Israel was using weapons that is internationally allowed, but they literally showed us white phosphorus, which is internationally banned from being used even in wartime. And that tells a lot about even the theory or the hypothesis that there are tunnels which they weren't even able to cross and investigate to begin with. I mean, 100%. That's fake news, isn't it?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So it's completely unfounded. Mm-hmm. Now back to the Ghaziyeh strike. Mm-hmm. So not 30 minutes after the strike happened, Lebanese media was at the scene of the bombing, and they were talking to the owner of the electrical generator company that Israel claimed was a weapons depot for Hezbollah that they destroyed. Mm-hmm. And the guy is from the town that was hit, and he tells them that these claims that this was a weapons depot are outright Zionist lies.
Mm-hmm. So we have the Zionist lies, just like the TPN, which is a Zionist Israeli entity channel that says
exactly.
That it is legitimate to strike even residential areas. And then you have the actual owner of that privately owned company saying that it is not. That's very interesting to see. And I didn't see any of that on any Western media, for that matter, or Zionist media. The biggest evidence by seeing the man who owns the generator company, Mohammed Layla, saying that the media, whether it's local or Western, is more than welcome to come and investigate and inspect the area to see that it is actually a privately owned company.
Definitely.
In the area hit in Ghaziyeh. Thank you very much, Fuad,
for
the extensive investigative reports and your analysis for this. Ladies
Thank
and
you.
Gents, now we move on to digital mainstream media. Now, the Hebrew media coverage of the ongoing fighting on the northern Palestinian front between Zionist Israel and the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Hezbollah over the course of 20 weeks, coinciding with the war on Gaza, indicates that the picture portrayed by the Western and Zionist Israeli mainstream media is very limited, and its margins are narrow to the point of being almost non-existent, as it is detailed to the scale of a military sensor. With us is Ms. Julia Qasim, our mainstream media expert, to tell us more about this. Thank you for your efforts, Julia, with us every week. What do you have for us today?
Thank you, Marwa, for having me. The complete lack of coverage by both Zionist Israeli media and Western mainstream media on the situation in the north of occupied Palestine is heavily based on a complete gag order that the Zionist occupation military has put on both media alike. Mm-hmm. And this gag order is essentially based on three specific prohibitions. Mm-hmm. The prohibition from approaching the borders, the prohibition from filming soldiers, and the complete prohibition from filming locations and vehicles. Mm-hmm. So the result of these prohibitions is that it's made the image non-existent in Hebrew media outlets. But the shocking part is even information seems to be non-existent. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, the Israeli occupation army itself delays announcing Hezbollah's rocket attacks, as Hezbollah themselves have published very clear information on their operation, mm-hmm. resistance operations.
We do actually see those reports, even video reports about it every now and then, specifically every day now, since over the past month, I think, of the operations that resistance is doing against the Zionist entity.
Yeah. You could see the juxtaposition in the consistent reports and the footage that Hezbollah has been showing of its operations against Zionist sites mm-hmm. from day one, in contrast to the Zionist entity's claims that they're hitting Hezbollah sites mm-hmm. On grainy footage and the reality of them just hitting civilian areas or open fields. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Times of Israel published a report supposedly inspired by the Washington Post that Iran cautioned Hezbollah to not spark a full-scale war with Israel, claiming that the Islamic Republic fears risking alleged gains it believes it had made in the region since the October 7 Al-Aqsa flood operation in the Gaza enclave. So according to the Times of Israel, Iranian representatives told Hezbollah officials on their last visit that Netanyahu is squeezed in the corner now and Hezbollah should not give him a way out by launching a wider war because this would make him a winner. But keep in mind, this dialogue was completely made up. So just 24 hours after the last Iranian-Hezbollah meeting, according to Zionist media itself, not even announced by the resistance yet, that Hezbollah had killed a female Israeli soldier and injured eight other soldiers in the rocket attack targeting Israeli military bases in the occupied city of Safed in the Upper Galilee in northern occupied Palestine. So even the Zionist Israeli Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, considered this an actual war waged by Hezbollah against Israel.
Well, talk about being so late to talk about this war. It's been going on for the past 20 weeks. I mean, Ben-Gvir is a delusional man, but I think you have more for us on what mainstream media was talking about concerning the lies about the front between Lebanon and Zionist Israel.
So in addition to that, Marwa, the Chicago Tribune published an opinion piece by Daniel De Petraeus. So with the title, "A War Between Hezbollah and Israel is the Last Thing the U.S. Wants." So in his piece, Petraeus claims that, I quote, "A large-scale Israeli campaign against Hezbollah, even if it were warranted, is the last thing the U.S. wants right now." So he also claims that the Biden administration has invested significant diplomatic capital into containing the fighting to Gaza and preventing it from spreading to other fault lines in the Middle East, reminding us that Austin, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, CIA Director William Burns, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs CQ Brown Jr., and President Joe Biden himself have all flown to the region in hopes of tamping down the flames of war.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Julia Qasim, for being with us and telling us about how mainstream media, whether in the West or in Zionist Israel, was reporting about this front. Now, ladies and gents, let us move on to social media expose. Well, Western and Zionist media were able to run from their responsibility of truthfully reporting about the reality on the ground in South Lebanon, facing the resistance of the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah, but they were not able to hide from social media users who opted to expose their lies and, in specific, the concealment of damage caused by the strikes of the resistance in northern Palestine in specific. Now, with us today is our own social media expert, Ms. Seema Itayim, who is also an editor at The Cradle, to showcase how social media reacted to the lies of Western and Zionist media. The floor is all yours, Seema.
Thank you, Marwa. Well, regarding the Zionist strike that took place last week, just 30 kilometers away from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, in Saida, southern Lebanon, in the town of Ghaziyeh, users on social media were split between those who condemned this blatant attack on a residential area, a private-owned company in a residential area, and then there were others who ridiculed the video that was released by the Israeli occupation forces on their official media, attempting to justify why they carried out this attack to begin with.
So, Seema, I don't know whether to laugh or not because it was a very tough target on the residents of Ghaziyeh, but I mean, they are opting to give excuses and pretexts for their targeting. Literally, this is the streets in 70% of Lebanese areas and neighborhoods.
Exactly. Actually, a tweet by War Monitor, a renowned account that we all on X, it perfectly describes this video. So War Monitor says, the Zionist terrorist proof that they struck a Hezbollah target in the Ghaziyeh area of Lebanon yesterday is flags and posters. While knowing there are thousands and thousands of these flags and posters across the south, pretty much on every single street.
That's the truth.
It is.
And it's so funny for me because if this is what kind of propaganda the Zionist entity shows its people, it's like, I mean, sorry, that's a B-rated movie from Bollywood, not even Hollywood.
We shouldn't be surprised. I mean, everything is proof of a stronghold now.
Yeah, so, sorry for that.
And as usual, you know, you have the regular Zionist accounts who always blame the victim just for merely existing. Hence why the Zionist regime had no choice but to target and kill them.
Sorry we existed, Zionist Israel, so go ahead, kill us.
Anything is proof. So another tweet, a disdainful post on X by Ron M, whose handle is at Jewtastic, sharing a video mix taken by a man from his balcony and another by university students who are returning home in a minivan at the end of their day, just as the airstrike took place, and they filmed it in horror.
So this was actually given a evidence of being is okay to hit? I mean, is this a reality pretext for hitting residential areas?
So he captioned this video by saying, Hezbollah have turned South Lebanon into a terrorist fortress, into Gaza. These are IDF strikes on Hezbollah terrorist sites in residential zones. Look at the massive secondary explosions as rockets and ammo explode. Look at the destruction Hezbollah will bring to Lebanon soon.
Wow.
Mind you, the Lebanese authorities' investigation concluded that both strikes targeted a privately owned motor generator manufacturing company and a wholesale tires company in Ghaziyeh. Yet for no reason other than wanting to be intentionally dishonest, Ron M. claimed that it was a weapons depot and that rockets were flying, not that bombs were being dropped from F-16 fighter jets.
I didn't see any rockets being fired or flown from the explosion site. Where did he see those? I mean, it's like blatant lying and the audacity of this hypocrisy.
Right, so he just described the impact as, you know, the impact was big, so it must be that they actually hit a depot because there's impact. And yes, according to him, weapons were there. And then there were anti-Zionist accounts, on the other hand, who pointed out the risk that the Zionist regime is taking by deliberately striking civilian areas in Lebanon. Like Daniel F. Prinsloo, who shared a video of the Ghaziyeh strike and said, Israel is now entering the phase where with confidence I can say they will be destroyed. These attacks in Lebanon are to allow a ground invasion by the IDF into Lebanon. Hezbollah is an organized and well-trained military. I am glad Israel's arrogance led to this. Israel's destruction will begin once they enter Lebanon. By these actions, Israel will lose northern Israel.
Well, thank you very much, Massima Itaim, for being with us and giving us the latest from how X was reacting to targeting residential areas in South Lebanon. Now, ladies and gents, we move to Figures Exposé. An opinion poll revealed that 90% of the Lebanese hold the United States accountable for Zionist Israel's continued attacks on Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. A survey conducted by the Consultative Center for Studies and Documentation, a Beirut-based research institution on strategic and development studies, was conducted 4 months into the Zionist aggression on Gaza and included a sample of 400 people from various Lebanese sects and regions. When asked of the United States of America is the main reason behind the continued escalation and the failure to end the Israeli aggression, the poll found that across all sectors of Lebanon, 94% of Shias agreed, 92.4% of Sunnis agreed, 83.8% of Christians agreed, and 92.9% of the Druze sect agreed. The poll also found that two-thirds of those polled agreed that the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Hezbollah, takes into account Lebanon's national interests in its support for the Palestinian people. Now, according to the poll, around 60% believed that Hezbollah's demonstration of strength would deter the Zionist Israeli entity from carrying out a comprehensive war against Lebanon. Now, let us move on to the most notable exposé voices for this week. You can find anything you want on TikTok, any commentary about any topic in the world on Instagram, Facebook, or on YouTube, right? Wrong. I personally spent 2 days doing a thorough research to find truthful, honest, and detailed information or even analysis from content creators to see if anyone mentioned the ongoing war in South Lebanon between the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah, and the Israeli occupation forces. And I honestly found nothing except a couple of Western social media influencers who actually tackled the issue. Here is our first expose voice for today, coming from Preston Stewart on TikTok, who gave a news brief of the situation in South Lebanon. Let us see what Preston had to say in specific about the firepower capabilities of Hezbollah.
So when we're looking at the threat that Hezbollah poses to Israel, the Hezbollah leader a few years ago said that they had 100,000 people in their military. That's probably on the high side. Most estimates I've seen are closer to the 50 to 60,000 range. But that's a pretty sizable force, right? I mean, Israel just mobilized their military and is saying they have 350, 360,000 ready to go. So you can't just brush aside 50,000 coming in from north, even on the low side. That's not counting the reservists that could potentially join their ranks. Additionally, when talking about some of the Israeli strikes into Hezbollah territory there in the south of Lebanon, there's an increased risk of aircraft being shot down. So Israel has complete air superiority over Gaza. It's not really even contested at all. That's not the case when you start looking at Lebanon. Militant Wire did a great piece recently showing some of the Hezbollah military capabilities in that parade and in that military exercise. They were just showcasing their man pads, manned portable air defense systems, and they got a lot of those. So no shortage of man pads. At the very least, Hezbollah has that capability. Now, there are some rumors about some other surface-air missile systems that they may have. Now, if these were well-known, I think Israel already would have tried to take these out, and they have tried to take these out at times in the past. But things like SA-17, SA-22, it's possible that Hezbollah has some of those. But either way, even if it's just the man pads, the threat to Israeli aircraft when they're moving north and engaging any targets in Lebanon is substantially higher than it is during the war over Gaza.
Another TikTok voice we will showcase here on Exposé is that of your favorite guy on TikTok. No, really, that is his username, that he posted a video about the war between Lebanon and the Israeli entity back in November, speaking about how Zionist Israel is bombing four countries at the same time. Here is your favorite guy.
In my opinion, I think that Hezbollah is going to get involved. Israel and Lebanon had a war in 2006 that killed 1,200 Lebanese people and 157 Israelis. On top of this, if we look to Syria, Israel's bombed Syria airports of Damascus and Aleppo like two times each since October 7th. Syria's two biggest airports. So right now we have Israel bombing Gaza Strip, the West Bank, Lebanon, and Syria. Four different places, four different areas. They really want war.
Now, some may ask, why are there not enough voices on the Western internet speaking up about the Zionist Israeli crimes in South Lebanon in specific? Well, the answer is in this intimidation message by the president of the Zionist Israeli entity himself, Isaac Herzog.
But the truth is that we are fighting a war for the entire universe, for the free world. I always say, if Israel was not there, Europe will be next. Because these barbaric jihadists want to get all of us out of the region and want to get all of Europe out of its place as well. And the United States is next too. So this war is something of an essential element in the history of humankind.
So apparently we here in Lebanon are barbaric jihadists that need to be eliminated. Typical Zionist demonization of an entire region is more than enough to make social media users hold back before commenting on Zionist Israeli crimes in my country, Lebanon. Ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Like always, we're here to talk about women's issue. And once more, I have the honor to be your host. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Sister Rehane. Well, actually, she's going to introduce herself pretty much perfectly for you. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Ladies.
Thank you very much, Sister Asma. I'm Rehane Paisapal, and I'm happy to be here with our dear listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day today.
Of course we would have. Since it's all ladies, then it's going to be wonderful. Well, just for the record, she is an Islamic researcher, and she works on ladies' issues and whatever that matters to us as ladies generally. So previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the history of hijab, and also we talked about why hijab is important. We got through the very aspects of in our religion. Everything is into detailed about hijab because it was the complete religion. It was the religion that was to complete all the other religions. So, of course, all the details must be revealed in this religion, and all the rules must be set out there for all the people to know where to go and how to do in their lives. Then the foundation was set. We talked generally about hijab, but we want to get into more of details and into more of information about hijab, like the things that have been mentioned in the Holy Book of Quran. So one of those things is the fact that women themselves are considered as these delicate creatures who've got a lot of adornment to share with other people, with the universe. So about these adornments, like about their beauties, there is also a verse that tells them to keep their adornments for themselves and do not reveal it aside for the people who are their close circles, like the mahram people, like what we have it in our religion. So let's talk on that as well.
Islam tells women to not show their adornments to non-mahram men. Of course, that means that women are free to not wear hijab in front of the mahram men in their family.
Like their fathers, like their husbands,
brothers,
yes. Uncles, and
yes, yes, the list can be found on the
internet. Yeah. Yeah.
Other than that, women must keep their beauties for themselves. And this is most beneficial for women themselves. Women are the primary beneficiaries of this. When women freely...
I mean, again, is also mentioned in the Quran as well. It says that they do this and this and this, and this is better for them. This is going to protect themselves from the coming problems and issues.
Exactly. So in society, if women freely show their beauty, I mean, we can see examples of these of this in some societies, Western societies mainly. But when women freely show their beauty to the world without any regards, in the end, it actually hurts themselves. It hurts the foundation of family. When women freely give away their beauty, men have no reason to give anything back to women. I mean, they can freely get whatever
yeah,
they want.
Without any responsibility.
Exactly.
They do not have to put themselves in an entanglement of marriage and problems. And, you know, it has got a lot of responsibilities to go to create a family, to be the responsible man of a family. So if all the women share everything for free without any subscription, so it's pretty much obvious that men would feel free.
Exactly. Like right now, there are many, I mean, I see on social media women complaining about men not meeting their standards and the bar being on the ground of women like being impressed by men's behavior. Like even a man opening a door nowadays would impress
yeah,
a woman.
Exactly.
But that is not the standard that Islam wants for women. Islam wants men to be protectors of women. قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ. So they are protectors and providers for women. And in order to somehow create that motivation, women mustn't show their beauty, mustn't give away their beauty for free. So women must observe modesty, and they must hide their beauty, and you know, they must say that this is a right that you have to gain to see my beauty.
Let's go for a short break and then we'd come to follow the rest. Welcome back, and thank you for staying with us. Well, this is Muslim Lady. You're listening to Arab English Radio. I'm Asma, and Sister Hani is here, and we're having quite an interesting topic to discuss about, which is hijab. And of course, we're getting into some details. Like, we came to the point that we should not show our adornments. This is a rule in our religion. And why this rule? Well, simply because to protect us from the problems we already know. I guess there is no one in this entire world who could claim that women would not face any problem if they live their life freely and they dress up the way they like freely, as free as they wish to. But there is no one who could claim that, because even in the Western societies, there are a lot of movies, there are a lot of stories, there are a lot of books based on women harassment, like the way women are being harassed by men just because they look like this, just because they wear this sort of stuff. And even if they don't wear in a specific way, women are unfortunately the easy targets in society for the sick men, of course.
Of course, that is correct. I actually always like to say that hijab, wearing hijab, comes from a place of love. And that love is towards yourself and towards other women and towards other men.
Exactly.
As well. So first of all, it comes from a place of love towards yourself, because by wearing the hijab, you announce to the world that I am more than my appearance. I am
exactly.
more than my beauty. I want you to hear what I have to say, know who I am before you see my beauty and before you judge me based on my appearance.
Exactly. So that's the point. I'm a human being. Do not look at me according to my appearance and do not take all these materialistic things about me. When you are going to think of me, of a person I am, try to look beyond my skin, beyond my features as a woman.
And that is what women, Muslim women, announce when they wear the hijab. And another aspect is love towards other women. And I think to explain that, I could just give the example of women having many body image issues nowadays, because a lot of women just freely show the way they look, show their beauty to the world. And a woman who maybe is not blessed as much as the other one in terms of beauty might look at that woman, other woman, and say, well, why don't I look like that? And maybe I am worth less than
exactly.
that other woman. It creates many body image issues. So by covering yourself in society, that also eliminates the expectation for women to all be at
the same
utmost,
picture.
Exactly, and to be at the utmost level of beauty. So another woman might feel less pressure to
exactly.
be perfect in terms of their image.
Yeah, that's very true. It just reminds me of peer pressure, like the thing that happens with teenagers. The same thing is happening to all the women in the entire universe. Like, if you look at this fashion industry, it's actually creating a lot of sicknesses to the women from all around the world. Like, the number of women with depression is increasing just because she cannot afford a perfect body, just because she thinks that she is lower than the other women. She feels like she is actually participating in a competition, in an unknown competition, and she knows that she's the loser. So she might go through depression just because other women are so much trying so hard to show this perfect picture, which does not exist in this world, you know? all as human beings, we might try to focus on appearance and we might create such a perfect appearance and body. But unfortunately, what matters is the inside. And all what we see in today's world is that the insides are just going through too much of problems and issues.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the West has somehow went to the opposite direction in terms of solution. And they think that the solution to this problem is to have inclusivity. And so everyone must show what they look like, all body types. But that's just not feasible. That's not doable.
And under the pretext of freedom.
Exactly.
The thing which hurts so much is the fact they call it freedom. This is not freedom. This is actually a propaganda. This is a program you have enacted into the world in order to achieve whatever you want.
Exactly.
If these fashion industries stop working, then a lot of tycoons would go down. A lot of people with a lot of money are going to come down. They're going to be dragged down to the level of ordinary people because, you know, it's an industry. And how does industry work? You have to have people as your wage slaves, and also you have to have some consumers, and these consumers are unfortunately the victimized women.
Exactly. And women lose in this game, of course.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's quite interesting to think about this stuff. Let's go for another break, and then we'd come for the last part of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, thank you for staying with us. Well, this is the last part for today's episode. We're still talking about women and how beautifully you just put it. I am wearing hijab because I love myself and because I share this love for other women as well.
Yes, and also for other men.
Yeah.
So the men in society, if I freely show my beauty to the world, to other men, even if they do not have sickness in their heart, a young man going through puberty maybe would... If they look in society and see all these beautiful women and they don't have the resources to get married, it would be very frustrating for that man. And that man would grow with many
challenges. And go through
challenges.
Too much pressure.
Exactly. Would go through so much pressure and challenges. And by wearing the hijab, I'm also showing compassion to other men in society. Maybe someone is already married, and if I show my beauty freely, that man might lose interest in his wife.
Exactly.
Or
and
maybe,
please do not say that these things are just legends and myth. They are things nobody... think about in today's world, because these are just old-fashioned sort of thinking. No, it is not. Even we can see in TV series, in
exactly,
movies,
yes.
The things that they themselves create, the basic thing, trigger, that starts a conflict between a man and a woman is their free relationship with other men and women. If we want to be that perfect human being, perfect, obedient, at the service of God, we have to be virtuous. We have to look out for our manner. We have to just be so careful about every single thing we say and we do in society. And again, I have to mention this point. In society, we're responsible toward each other. Like, it's not just I am getting whatever I wish. No, it's you are going to have impact on other people. And in the end, when this world is going to be finished, which is, of course, a fact, and we're not going to stay in here forever, we have to have answers in front of God. So you're going to be questioned. Whatever you do has got to have a logical answer. So, yes, this is all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with doubts and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Rabbana
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mahdi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdu wa thana lillahi rabbil alameen. Peace and blessings be upon the last messenger of Allah, as all praise belongs to Allah, and on the pure progeny of the last messenger of Allah, Ahlul Bayt, salawatullahi alayhim ajma'in. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, this is the program Bridge, and we are spending some few minutes together on contemplating on the supplications of Sahifa Sajjadiyya, trying to understand and implement the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, especially Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi as-salam, the author of Sahifa Sajjadiyya, and implement his teachings into our lives so that our spiritual life will get better quality, will be escalated or elevated to a better level, to a higher level, inshallah. Our lives will be filled with the nur and light of guidance. As we approach the coming of the month of Ramadan, making sure to connect with the lines of the du'as of Sahifa Sajjadiyya is becoming even more important, is also becoming more imperative to, inshallah, connect with the du'as of Sahifa Sajjadiyya. We talked about the 12th du'a, which was titled as seeking forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, seeking repentance towards Allah, and in confession, fil i'tiraf wa talab at-tawbah. And we reached to the part that Imam says, la ay'asu mink, subhanaka, exalted you are, glory be to thee. I will not get into the trap of despair, which is what shaitan wants. La ay'asu mink, I will not fall into despair from you. Let's take a quick break and come back.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyya of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
All right, respected listeners to IRIB English Radio, talking about the du'as of Sahifa Sajjadiyah, Imam alayhi salam says, La ayasu mink. I do not despair of you. Meaning that I do not get hopeless of your mercy, O Allah. وَقَدْ فَتَحْتَ بَابَ التَّوْبَةِ وَقَدْ فَتَحْتَ لِي بَابَ التَّوْبَةَ إِلَيْكَ. Indeed, you have opened, you have initiated a gate and opened it to me. It's called the door or the gate of repentance. And this door and gate leads to you directly. فَتَحْتَ لِي بَابَ التَّوْبَةِ إِلَيْكَ. Towards you, this door, this gate, this opening will get me back on the track to you, will get me back to the right direction. بَلْ أَقُولُ مَقَالَ الْعَبْدِ الذَّلِيلِ الظَّالِمِ لِنَفْسِ. Or rather, not only I do not get hopeless, but also in addition, I speak to you, I say the words of, then Imam starts to present his humbleness. He says, مَقَالَ الْعَبْدِ الذَّلِيلِ, that lowly servant, الظَّالِمِ لِنَفْسِ, who has oppressed himself, who has been having wronged himself, and الْمُسْتَخَفِّ بِحُرْمَةِ رَبِّهِ, the one who made light of his Lord's inviolability, and الَّذِي أَذُمَتْ ذُنُوبُهُ, whose sins are dreadful, فَجَلَّتْ, great, وَأَدْبَرَتْ أَيَّامُهُ, whose days have parted, his time has passed. Month of Ramadan is coming up. Remember the promises that you've made to yourself on the past Ramadan, or before the starting of the past Ramadan. You said to yourself, you know, by the end of this month, I'm going to abandon that certain habit. I'm going to make sure I reform in that certain direction. I'm going to make sure I reconnect with the Holy Quran. And guess what? With a blink of eyes, it's another year, another opportunity, another Ramadan. The Ramadan that the Holy Prophet says, الشغيو, the true deprived one is the one who gets deprived from the mercy of Allah in this month, calling the month of Ramadan as the month of mercy of Allah. Let's take a break and come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
All right, respected listeners to IRIB English Radio, on this last portion of this episode, the Holy Quran has two beautiful verses, and I will mention both of them, on the importance of tawbah, on the importance of repentance. Imam says, I do not lose my despair and my hope, and in addition, I speak to you with the language of a lowly servant with those certain conditions that I mentioned in the beginning or in the middle of this session. The Holy Quran says, Surah Ash-Shawra, verse number 25. Surah 42, verse number 25. He says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم هو الذي يقبل التوبة عن عباده. Describing who Allah is, or describing Allah, he says, هو الذي, He is in the status of, he is the one who accepts tawbah, who accepts repentance from his servants and pardons misdeeds. And وَيَعْفُ عَنِ السَّيِّئَاتِ وَيَعْلَمُ مَا تَفْأَلُونَ. And he is the only one who truly knows what you do. And another verse of the Holy Quran, Surah Ma'idah, verse number 39. So Surah 5, verse number 39. The Holy Quran has فَمَنْ تَابَ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذُلْمِهِ وَأَسْلَحَ. Whoever, but whoever, repents after his wrongdoing and reforms, indeed Allah will turn to him in forgiveness. Wow. فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ يَتُوبَ عَلَيْهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ. Indeed, Allah is the most forgiving and the most merciful. إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ. We ask Him to include us and shower us and bestow upon us His mercy and His forgiveness as we enter upon the month of feast. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
That was Sheikh Mahdi in the program Bridge on RIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را.
Hidden Files. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi and very happy to bring you a very special Hidden Files today, dealing with the situation in Palestine and talking to someone who understands and knows the Zionist regime very well. I'm very happy to welcome to the program Sheikh Talal Abdurrahman Shirim, a former prisoner in Israeli regime prisons, and he's also currently the head of the prisoners' files for Hamas. Thank you so much, Sheikh, for being with us here on Hidden Files. Now, as a former prisoner who spent 18 years in Israeli jails, how much do you value your freedom today, and how hopeful are you about the liberation of the occupied Palestinian territories?
I seek refuge in Allah from the cursed Satan. May peace and blessings of Allah be upon the most honorable creation and the master of Prophet Muhammad and upon all his family. First of all, thank you for having me today to clarify issues regarding the prisoner's file. Currently, I'm in charge of this file. No one can speak about a prison better than the one who was jailed in it. According to poetry, no one knows the difficulty of something except those who are grappling with it. Freedom is priceless and a must. If I want to maintain my dignity, I have to preserve this homeland. Hence, what we pursue, which is the liberation of Palestine, is precious, and the price that we pay is high. The Palestinian detainee suffers two pains. The first pain, when his house is raided by the occupation's army. The troops detonate the doors using bombs, and then enter the home and begin ransacking it, destroying everything inside. They terrify the children, women and fathers and mothers, in plain sight of the prisoner, who is handcuffed behind his back. Any person in that house who wants to protest or speak is hit in plain sight of the entire family. This is the first suffering that the detainee grapples with. The army ransacks the house and takes everything inside. If the troops find money, they steal it. They also steal the jewelry of the women, and they take any electronic devices such as computers and phones. They confiscate everything. And if the prisoner has a car, They also seize it under the pretext that it was used in supporting terrorism. That prisoner is taken in plain sight of the children who scream. This also constitutes a suffering for the family, for the children, for the women, for the father and for the mother. Afterwards, the second suffering that the prisoner will endure begins when he is placed in the army troops' vehicle and taken for interrogation. On the way to the interrogation, the detainee is physically and verbally assaulted and hears blasphemous words. All of that is part of a psychological torture that precedes the interrogation. We will talk about the interrogation later in the interview, but I want to say that the interrogation is inhuman. Allah the Almighty said in the Quran, "Indeed, we have dignified the children of Adam." So it doesn't make sense that another child of Adam comes and breach your freedom and attack you and your ideas and religion and doctrine. That's kind of insane, but as I have said, Palestine is precious. Palestine is the heart of the Arab and Muslim world, and whatever sacrifices we make, they will remain slight compared to the goal of liberating Palestine.
Well, according to human rights groups, more than 8,000 Palestinians are currently lodged in Israeli jails. Can you share more specific details about the total number of detainees, including those arrested since October the 7th?
Unfortunately, there is false information even among the human rights groups, the Red Cross, etc. But as a person who is in charge of that file, I will give you the accurate figures. Before October 7th, some 5,200 detainees were imprisoned, including about 450 children and minors under the age of 18 and 35 women. The rest of the detainees were men. But after October 7th, the occupation authorities launched a crazy, brutal campaign against Palestinians, arresting members of the Legislative Council, engineers, doctors, university students, general public, former prisoners, women and children. Now, the number of Palestinians held in Israeli jails exceeds 12,000. That means 7,000 more Palestinians have been detained since October 7th. That's kind of insane because about 7,000 people were detained during just 4 months. Between 7,000 and 8,000 people are also reported missing, and their whereabouts are unknown. So we're talking about a huge number of detainees and prisoners. These were the actual figures of Palestinian detainees held in Israeli jails.
We often come across horrifying stories of systematic torture inside Israeli jails. Inmates electrocuted, deprived of food and sleep, denied medical care, handcuffed and assaulted, and even sexual abuse. Thus, the apartheid regime used torture as a weapon of war against Palestinians.
I have been detained 10 times since the first Intifada or uprising in 1987. I was detained and released 10 times, so I have a lot of experience and have a lot to say about what takes place during the interrogations and about the horrifying stories I heard from my fellow detainees. Regarding torture, I have said that the torture starts from the moment of arrest and continues until the end of the interrogation. During the interrogation, all inhuman techniques are used, such as stripping the detainees of his clothes, with the interrogator mocking him or flirting with him as a kind of assault. But honestly, no sexual assault takes place, and I haven't heard something about that. The individual, however, could be threatened with sexual assault. The wives or sisters of some of the detainees were also detained and brought to the interrogation. There, the men were threatened with subjecting their wives or sisters to sexual abuse if they refused to make a confession. This is a method to force the detainees to speak and make a confession. Some of the detainees break down and speak up as they want their wives, sisters, or mothers to return home, and subsequently the interrogator gets what he wants. Sometimes it is the detainees who threaten the interrogators that if their wives or sisters were not freed, they would witness unprecedented things. These strong men instilled fear in the regime's authorities that later released those women who were used as tools to exert pressure on their husbands or brothers who were being interrogated. Regarding the other techniques, I personally spent a week, 7 days, sitting on a chair with my hands cuffed behind my back and my face covered. I spent 7 days without sleep and without food during the fasting month of Ramadan. They were giving us just one meal every 2 or 3 days. When I was asking for water, they were spilling water on the floor. So if you wanted to drink water, you had to drink the water spilled on the floor. These were among the interrogation techniques. There were other techniques that depended on the case or the method adopted by the interrogator. There was the good guy, bad guy,